Welcome back, everyone, to GDC Live. I'm ridiculously excited to have Kalle all the way from Finland, coming from the team over at Next Games, co-founder of Next Games. Right? Thank you for being with me.
Happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and it's really exciting, not only just for GDC here today, but for me to sit here because I've been playing your guys' games ever since the first Walking Dead No Man's Land came out. And now you guys just, last week released a trailer for Our World, which is a brand new kind of augmented VR mix, whatever, amazingness.
Augmented reality and location-based, nice.
And I am, one, a huge Walking Dead fan. Now, I will say, I haven't read too many of the comics, but I've definitely watched every single season up to the current point. But before we get into all this stuff, I want to talk about Next Games, kind of how it was created, like how you've grown so much. So can you maybe talk a little bit about your background and where Next Games came from and where are you guys at right now?
Sure. Yeah, well, funnily enough, my background doesn't come from gaming. I was more in the IT sector of things, so in hosting, and also building scalable server systems. But I've always been keen on creating games. I think I was 5 years old when I made my first computer game, but never been a professional game maker, but more of a hobbyist and making my own games on my spare time. You know, when you're working on IT, it's sometimes it's just relieving to do some coding on the side. But that being said, like all the rest of our founders, they're all from gaming background. So Next Games was founded in 2013. There was four of us in the beginning. Quite rapidly, we kept on growing. We first launched one smaller game, which was based on our own IP, which was called Compass Point West. And quite shortly after that, we launched The Walking Dead No Man's Land. And of course, we were super thrilled as a small company, an early startup to being able to work with such a great license. And so from there, we start building our company. And currently now we're working with the new titles and we have grown quite a bit from 4 people to 120 people.
Wow.
So the studio has grown a lot. Yeah. It's been quite a journey. We also went public a year ago. And we were first Finnish company, gaming company to go public. So, you know, for a co-founder, it's a really exciting journey.
Yeah, well, first, congratulations not only on going public, but all the game and the games you've made and the great success that they've had.
Thank you.
I mean, when you founded and co-founded Next Games, did the company decide that they wanted to focus on mobile? You know, you said a lot of the co-founders came from a game background, maybe working on consoles or PC, but in 2013, I was thinking I got into mobile right around 2012, about six and a half years ago, and mobile was still early, I think. You know, the games weren't as complex. We weren't talking about geolocation-based games quite as much, or you know, having some augmented type reality type stuff. So did you guys always dream of it, or how did you decide on going that route?
Well, basically, from the very beginning, we were focused. We knew that we were going to do mobile games, and we knew all the games that we would do would be free to play. So that was our goal from the get-go, sort of like what we want to accomplish is really create good games in that landscape. And Joachim Ågren, who was sort of the sparkle of all this happening, who started gathering the original founders, he already had a good vision. He previously worked at Supercell,
okay.
So he had a good vision on how to create these kind of free-to-play games, where should we go, how can we improve and iterate the current offering that the games during that time were giving to the players. So we had a pretty clear goal on gaming side of things.
Nice. Well, I want to talk some of the architecture, sounds like, because since you come from an architecture background, IT, I want to first start out, I'm going to play a trailer for some of the highlights of No Man's Land. So if people don't know about No Man's Land, which was the first Walking Dead game that you did on mobile, kind of play a trailer here, walk through. And this is, can you talk about, like, when you guys went to design this, like, how was it pitched and what was the inspiration for the game itself?
Well, whenever we start working with the new IP, and we basically started this process while the No Man's Land was still in development, we start to go to the fans. Obviously, we first try to find the fans within the company, and we start talking with the fans. How do they see the world? How they would like to live the world? What is their fantasy, in a sense?
Yeah.
And from there, we start to figure out what kind of gameplay, what would make sense, what would fit the brand. And that is sort of the journey that we usually take in order to sort of fit the brand most best way.
Yeah. And since you're not only working with the brand, what I think is interesting about just working with something like The Walking Dead is that it's an ongoing television series. So not only is there an established brand, but an ever-changing brand. You know, people that we love are constantly no longer there all of a sudden. And so that means that the game has to change over time because you're always adding new content. So not only do you have to scale to tens of millions of users, but then you're scaling to adding all this new content. What were the challenges that you ran into, and what were some of the things that we have in Azure that helped out?
Well, yeah, that's true. The game keeps on evolving throughout the time. So compared to like traditional games, especially this kind of game that has to follow the storyline of the TV series to make any sense for the fans, it is very much a growing game. So in order to accommodate that, of course, we had to have good plans on how we're going to present whatever is reflect what is happening on the TV series into the game. So we created a system where we can quite easily provide new content for the game. So we use Azure as our backend. So that was definitely one of those tools. For example, when we wanted to show some sneak previews and some exclusive content after each episode had aired.
Oh, yeah.
So we used Azure Media Services in order to stream this exclusive video content right into the game.
Oh, cool.
So we can keep the users within the game and don't have to send them to third-party video streaming services, which is, of course, good for retention. So those kind of things we need to be. And, of course, like I believe we were the first one in the world to ever do a system where you can actually see and play things or environments or characters that were introduced in the TV series a day before. So every Monday after the Sunday that the show had aired, we would update the content on the game side so we could introduce, for example, the characters that were introduced in the previous show, or you can replay some of the environments in a mission. So it really speaks to fans because there's really actually content that is tightly coupled with the TV show.
Yeah, it sounds like not only that, you really are getting that retention. I think sometimes not only is the game evolving, the TV show is evolving, but being there like immediately is like that day one or day negative one, right? Just having that content drew me back in over and over again. It was this reminder of this new, fresh content as we're kind of inundated with notifications and email, like everything all day, and other things popping up. So how did your team handle that scale? Because not only do you have to deliver huge packages of assets, but that's on a global scale. Like that's, you have millions, tens of millions of players everywhere. So how did you and the team kind of handle that?
Well, actually, the assets are pretty simple to handle. They're just, you know, dumb files in a sense. So
yeah,
it's a matter of just using a CDN. So we distribute to do CDN, and we're able to put there. Maybe the tricky part is how do you design the assets themselves to make sure that you can easily update the game. So what is the architecture of the game? So you have the data split into small enough chunks that you can update them on the fly, and then have a delivery system on top of that. So we created that sort of like content management system on top of Azure in order to be able to authorize all these publishing moments that when you need to actually publish the necessary content for the game.
Got it. Very cool. And then we were also talking a little bit about some of the other services that you were using inside the game itself, essentially since it's on such a massive global scale. And we talk about, often I say a lot of videos at Build and other Microsoft conferences of No Man's Land and the team out and scaling the actual game and the back end. But how does the team then handle all of the active connections, all of the data pumping through? Like, how did the team architect that, and how did Azure help out there?
Well, we created our own backend solution altogether. So No Man's Land is currently running on top of cloud services, on Azure Cloud Services, which are quite a mature sort of a platform currently. So we created a way of having Azure Traffic Manager before those cloud services, so we can have multiple cloud services. And as the one cloud service is just basically a package of virtual machines that are completely managed. So we had when we initially launched the game, I think we had like 20 different cloud services or 40. And each of those had at least 20 virtual machines. And so you can count from there that it's quite a lot of virtual machines in order to run the whole thing. But we wanted to be absolutely sure that no matter how popular we hit that weekend when we launched, we should be able to handle all the content and all the data should be delivered. And underneath, because of course we need to store somewhere the players.
Yeah.
So as that data keeps on generating, we used Cosmos DB to store some of the sort of metadata of the players. And then to actually store the player state, we used Azure Storage Blobs, which scale just tremendously. You know, they have some limits, but you can work around them by, you know, adding storage accounts. So there's basically no limit to it. And so that was basically how we handled most of the traffic.
Nice. I really like also kind of the different orchestration of the parts. And Cosmos DB is one of my favorite services just because, like, when you launch this game, it may be, you have no idea how popular it's going to be in every region. So you may launch with a region and say, okay, I think Europe and Americas are going to be popular. But then all of a sudden, what if Australia is just all of a sudden, like, there's a Walking Dead convention and everyone's playing the game. You're like, oh, I just need to geo-replicate. I think I was on a show talking about, oh, I'm just going to, you know, spin up a new data center, essentially. It's like clicking a button. Yeah. Like, no, all my data's there and it's all replicated, which is crazy to think about. You know, years ago, or like when development companies and teams in IT were had servers just sitting underneath it, was it coming from an IT background, like, did you feel comfortable going 100% kind of cloud first?
Yeah, definitely. That was sort of my very first technological strategies that I set into it, that we will never have an on-premises server. Like, not over my dead body, you know. Never will have one.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good decision because there's no need to have one. And it wouldn't make any sense whatsoever ever to sort of have any on-prem. Like, from the times when we launched The Walking Dead No Man's Land, we had a huge amount of capacity. We didn't know how much we would need. Then we quite quickly saw, okay, there's plenty of room that we can shave off from here. So we started to downscale the system.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be able to do that with on-prem stuff. You know, you would end up like, hey, who wants to buy a server kind of situation.
Yeah, I have to imagine that after every Monday, that there was huge spikes, right? It's like, And that scale goes up and down through the week.
Yeah, you can definitely see there's a wave going through the week. You can pretty much see how we're set up our live operations. So that always brings people in when a new challenge becomes in the game. So that brings people in, show brings people in, so you can see this distinct pattern, how people play. And you can even see, for example, when in the US there's a lunch break. You know, you can see it there. That's the biggest market. So you can detect these kind of things, or you're wondering what happened there. Or I distinctly remember on the weekend when we launched the game, you could see the commercial breaks on the TV show.
little 3-minute spikes, boom, boom, boom. That's so fun. That's actually really interesting to think about, because as someone that I always watch kind of on demand, but when I watch some of the shows live or sports, it's like immediately we just pull out our phones, all that stuff. But I have to imagine nowadays that there was this constant stream even during the show going, right? Because even though everyone's watching The Walking Dead, we're still on our phones, like still playing it,
that's
still
true.
Going. Just funny. Well, let's talk about the new hotness. I'm really excited. You guys announced later last year The Walking Dead R World and just released a trailer. Can you just give us a high-level pitch of this brand new game? Like, what is it? What is the inspiration?
Sure. Yeah. It's based on the same universe of The Walking Dead. It's location and AR based, so you have the whole world to explore. Basically, you're trying to survive in a world that is just infested with walkers. You're very much in the same situation as the characters are in the show. You have to find survivors, find gear, find help, and try to just clear out and reconquer your city back to you from the walkers and establish some sort of a place to be.
Yeah, and this will be like geospatial, geo-aware. So no matter, I'm here at GDC right now. Is it everywhere that I travel like half the year? So everywhere I go, is it going to be like a new adventure essentially for me?
Oh, yeah, in a sense, yeah. At least you will be seeing new people there, interacting with different people, and it will definitely look different.
All right.
Depending where you are.
Well, let's play the trailer. But this is a trailer that just launched last week, so I definitely want to give it a go here. I'm so excited. Let's see if we get some audio. And this is really different because we're in the real world, where with No Man's Land, you're on your phone, you're playing this, and we're seeing maps, we're seeing interactions, we're seeing where hordes are at, and all the characters that we know and love.
Yeah,
are
they're all there.
Yeah.
And of course, all the iconic weapons that they have, so.
And this will be on both iOS and Android.
Yeah.
Coming out, and then, right. Since it's kind of our, you know, not only just, you know, location aware, but AR based, what type of, what is in there on mobile today that is enabling this that just wasn't possible, you know, even when you were making No Man's Land?
Well, of course, you know, for AR side of things, both that Google and Apple had made the AR capable APIs available. So Google has AR Core and Apple has AR Kit, so that definitely helps. The development of these aspects. Although when we started to do this game in first place, that was well before even those announcements happened last year. So yeah, we were already working on our own tech. But things that they solve there, they're solvable, but you know, they're not easy things to solve. And the second thing that they're using there is we actually have Google Maps there. So Google has actually announced they have this Unity project that you can use your maps more easily there. We're using that. So we're doing sort of tight work with them in order to use that tool that they have.
Are you able to leverage kind of a lot of the hard work that you did with No Man's Land into essentially this new game? Are you using new services or different architecture kind of from your mind? Because it seems like every week we're announcing a new service in Azure.
That's true. So, it's like a race.
Yeah.
Try to keep up and try to follow. Would one of these actually be good for you? But yeah, we created a backend solution back for the No Man's Land, and we plan it to be very generic so we could use with other products. And actually, we did use that with the Compass Point West, so it is running two games. But as we moved forward and time went on, we started looking into like how can we improve the current setup that we had.
Yeah.
And as we were already built on top of cloud services, that is sort of a, as I said, quite a mature service that Azure is providing, we start looking, okay, this eventually there will be time when this service will be just getting too old for us, so we wanted to move forward and see what is new on Microsoft side and what could support us and what could give us, like, for example, better capability for upgrading, better capabilities for failover. So quite quickly we went and started looking into few options, but Service Fabric was definitely the answer for us. So now, as we're working on with our world, the whole backend is built on top of Service Fabric.
Oh, very cool.
It does use some of the Azure functions to do some minor sort of branching kind of things, and we use web apps in order to sort of do dashboards and things like that. But the main logic and everything is running on top of Azure Service Fabric.
That's very cool. And even, I think, just last week we announced we open source it,
yeah,
which I think was really cool.
That is very exciting.
Yeah, I think it is kind of nice because then it's kind of, you can have your own Service Fabric in a way and modify it and tweak it and contribute back if you need substantial changes.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that world of transparency at Microsoft and this open source world, and we work closely with developers. Can you talk about your relationship with the team's relationship? How's it been working with such a big company such as Microsoft?
Well, yeah, it keeps on surprising me how, even though Microsoft is a huge monolithic, you know, corporation, it still feels so small because we have been, I don't know why, but we have been managed to sort of get in touch with the right people and be very involved with, sort of, for example, with Service Fabric team or with the Cosmos DB team. So I've been always so surprisingly surprised about the fact that we can actually contribute and have an open channel and have changes done and even do things like when new SDK comes in, you know, Microsoft people are calling to us asking like, hey, would you like to preview the SDK before we go live and give us feedback? And we're like, well, we're just a tiny game developer somewhere here and back in Finland. It just feels almost like honored to be involved in these kind of things. So to us, the corporation has been really, really good.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I love hearing those stories because for me, a lot of game devs come and just any other big company. We walk around GDC, we see these huge neon signs and all this big marketing money, but at the end of the day, we're just developers making developer tools that want to make, you know, great things that enable developers to do really complex and awesome things. Like when you look at the amount of different services you just, you know, mentioned, not only just Service Fabric, but, you know, web backends and Azure Functions with serverless compute, which to me is one of the most exciting things that we're doing. And as I think developers start to find little use cases for, like I was telling someone, like, why would you use serverless compute? I go, well, I could spin up a web service and have a website on 24/7, but why do I need that if I just want to run like a database cleanup script every 24 hours? Yeah. Serverless compute, boom, 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 boom. So as the team found some of those new services like serverless compute, like enabling kind of like a migration path from some of the old services at all?
Yeah, sure. Like for example, like the way we do analytics is that we push everything from the server to Event Hub. Now we used to have it just a worker role consuming those Event Hub events. Now these days it's Azure Functions, and like getting that up and running is super. Was super simple because basically all the boilerplate code was already there. How many Azure Functions you want to be handling this Event Hub? That many? Okay, off you go. And then you just basically we copy paste the old code from the actual execution part where we distribute the analytics to different analytics services.
Very cool. It seems like you are staying in kind of that Unity, C Sharp world. I'm sure you have a lot of game devs writing a bunch of different code. So kind of being in that Microsoft ecosystem, when you're going out recruiting new developers, what are you looking for? I mean, it's also kind of a cool pitch to say, like, what is next for Next Games, right? And what kind of talent you're looking for. So what type of developer designers are you looking for? Like, what type of talent attracts you?
Well, I think, like, to us, the culture is very important.
So now what is the culture like? I haven't been to Finland. I want to go now because I'm so excited. I love traveling and seeing a whole bunch of places. So what is the culture, I guess, of Next Games, since you just mentioned it, in general, in Finland?
Culture for us, like, when we started the company, that was sort of there's a few things that we wanted to do. Firstly, we wanted to do very successful games, but secondly, and equally as important, we wanted to create the best possible company. So that sort of brought the culture to life. And of course, culture is something that you just cannot say you have to do this. You have to just nurture the way that it starts to go. And to us, the culture in our company is very much, it's based on our values. So our values is caring, curiosity, and courage. So those words very much reflect how our culture works. Caring is one of the biggest thing in our culture. So we care about each other. We try to help a lot of each other. It's very open. You know, we want everybody to be heard. We want to have a sort of a very flat organization in a sense that at least everybody is very approachable. You know, management comes down and sits with the game teams. You know, there's no barrier of. If you're an intern, it's completely fine to go to talk to the CEO.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
And everybody who joins the company always has lunch with the CEO in the first week and things like that. So we try to keep it like very sort of almost like family oriented, closed environment.
So when you're out there recruiting kind of new game devs, new designers, things like that, what does the typical kind of interview process at Next Games look like? I'm just interested.
We have quite a few phases that we go through, and we always look for talent, but we also look for passion. You know, people need to be passionate about doing free-to-play mobile games, and they really want to join the company. So those are one of the key criteria. And we always have at least three rounds of interviews. And from my point of view, I always love the last interview the most, because that's always with the colleagues that you will be having. So it's sort of like a two-way audit where you can see who we'll be working with, and those who we'll be working with will see you, because you will be spending a lot of time with those people, on the normal work days.
Yeah.
So you want to make sure that even though if the company from the interview process looks interesting and whatever you saw on the web pages and whatever material provided to you, you still want to see that the people that you're going to work with are that kind of people you get along with, because that's the most important part.
So you got to fit into that culture of the team I'm going to work with. So you're going to be there every day.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. So what's next for Next Games?
Well, of course, it is. We're very much working now with The Walking Dead, Our World, but we're also working on a game based on the Blade Runner movie franchise. So that's something that also that we're working on. And then we have a few other projects going on, but they're still early on development.
Does the team like working with IP? Like, I know you said the first one was your own IP, kind of that. Then you jumped over The Walking Dead, now Blade Runner. So is it something that you see, like, kind of working with IP, like, over and over again? Or do you think you'll go back to the roots at some point?
No, I don't think we go back to the roots. We sort of tried that, and we quite quickly saw that the current market is very difficult to get noticed with your own IP. And then again, when you're working with this super cool IPs, yeah, you get to do some, like, really nice stuff and get to interact with the great, you know, world-known IPs, get to know their characters and everything more in detail. So in a sense, it is just more exciting to work with the IPs.
Yeah. And it's probably easier to attract some talent too, because you're like, who doesn't want to go work on a Walking Dead game, right?
Yeah, if you happen to be the fan of the show, and it's a match made in heaven for you.
Yeah. Do you get to work really close with the Walking Dead teams, like the television crew? Like, well, how's that collaboration?
We're in a constant communication with AMC in order to make sure that we are aligned and everything is working fine. So our, I don't know that much of the details, because it's mainly for the producer side of things, but they keep on like a constant channel open, so they can always sync up what's going on there. So it's very tight.
So what would be some of, like, you know, we're at a game developers conference, there's a lot of new, you know, indie devs out there, new developers just getting started. Like, what would your, you know, tips and tricks and kind of recommendations for someone just now getting into the game industry? It's a tough question, because there's a lot of aspects to it, right?
Sure, so. there is. I could give a few. The very easy one is, like, pick a good engine for yourself. Don't try to do that by yourself unless you're really into creating engines.
Yeah.
So Unity, Unreal, both work well. But they give you a head start, because you probably want to be making games instead of tech. Then another one is that when you start creating the game, as these days these games are more like services, so start thinking about how are you going to run the live operations for your game as one of the first things that you figure out, instead of figuring out sec-to-sec gameplay and how's that going to work out. Think about the bigger picture first, and then how your sec-to-sec will accomplish that in the long run.
Yeah. All right. I like that. Especially, I always like the first point there is, we call it like building or standing on the shoulders of giants, right? And those giants are those engines. They already did all the hard work for you. The game company I wrote, we wrote our own engine, and that was no fun. It's just not fun unless you're an engine developer, and then even your engine developer's like, I just want to make the game. I think that's the point of it. All right, so final question for you, easy one. When you're not building awesome games, like, what are you playing? Like, what's on the list? Even you, but around the studio.
Well, there's so many. Well, everybody's a player, gamer, and in our studio, so people are playing a lot of games. I think, of course, like, PUBG is one of those games that people tend to play quite a lot. Rainbow Six is also some huge. Fortnite. And then we play a lot of our own game, like Our World. I'm totally hooked on that. So,
do you guys get, like, groups around the office that are all just, like, playing the game together? That's really cool.
Yeah, actually, when we were still a bit smaller, we had this mandatory playing hours. You have to play.
Nice. Yeah.
That can be that bad of a working place. And I always start talking to my kids, saying, like, yeah, we used to have, like, mandatory hours that I have to play at work.
Yeah.
And they're like, that's just so unfair.
You have to know your product you're working on, right? Cool. So anything else you want to tell us about Our World? Any little inside information, anything? Not too much. It's coming soon.
And there's not much more I can tell.
So awesome. So go check out, go get No Man's Land today. Just go install, go play it. Check out the trailer and more information. Kali, thank you so much for joining me and talking about all the awesome stuff you guys are working
on. It was a pleasure.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Well, stay tuned for even more right here in the Azure booth at GDC.